And let's start with the acknowledgements. Usually they are at the end, but I prefer to show them at the beginning. Of course, I wish to thank Dr. Schaffner and Dr. Klingert for this great opportunity. And I apologize in advance because this webinar contains a lot of information. Most of it is technical, difficult, sometimes controversial, very recent. It changes by the minute and in continuous change and evolution. However, this is not entertainment, so I hope you will forgive me if sometimes this will be difficult to understand, but you can replay this talk of mine, and of course you can ask for questions. And I thank you, all the attendees. Dr. Schaffner told me there are about 8,000 people registered. So I thank you so much for your attention and for the patience that you will have to follow this talk. Now, before we start, it's very, very important to remember that any medical or scientific information that I present in this webinar is provided for research, educational, and informational purposes only and uniquely. It is not in any way intended or implied to be used as a substitute for professional medical advice. If you need professional medical advice, go and ask Dr. Klingert, Dr. Schaffner, they are the best, but not today's talk. Today's talk is not medical advice. So it's not intended for treatment or care of any disease mentioned or implied in this study, with particular focus, of course, on the current epidemics of coronavirus. Caregivers, researchers, and interested parties should research all information given today. And actually, this is the purpose of this talk, to inspire researchers so that you can further research, further make up your mind. And of course, standards of care for each pathology, including these epidemics, must be followed, as well as rules and regulations established by health authorities of each country. I don't know where are you on the other side of the screen, whether you're in the US or in Australia or in Italy or China. So please make sure that you do not run into trouble. Sequences in a coronavirus. Now, let's see, where does this virus come from? Let me anticipate, nobody knows as of today. So if you ask me, do you know where is this virus coming from? The answer is, I don't know it, nobody knows it. I'm not a big fan of conspiracy theories, so I prefer to look at science. Now, this paper was published again on China Archive by Chinese researchers just a few days ago. And they write, phyloepidemiologic analysis, that is looking at the RNA of the virus, suggested that the source of the new coronavirus at the Wuhan market was imported from elsewhere. So now the theory that the virus was generated into this wild animal market, poorly regulated, now it's over. Now, the virus has been imported from elsewhere in that market. Now, the crowded market boosted the circulation of the virus and spread it to the whole city in early December 2019. But the virus came from somewhere else, from where we don't know. This was published 3 days ago. It is in Italian. I couldn't find it in English. But essentially, an Italian study that has been published in the Journal of Medical Virology and immediately sent to the World Health Organization demonstrates that the epidemics began between October and November. So the theory that in January the virus jumped from a bat or from a rat or from some other wild animal to humans in that market is overcome. So the virus came from somewhere else, and the virus was there in mid-October. So you see, things are changing very, very rapidly, and there is more that we don't know than what we know. Let's go back to the article of those Indian researchers. Because they use those words, uncanny similarity, that is unlikely to be fortuitous, they were pushed or forced or invited to withdraw the article. So now this becomes quite paradoxical. The article is still there. You can see it. You can download it. You can do it right now if you like. But it has this red alert. This article has been withdrawn. Why the Indian researchers, they decided to withdraw this paper? Were they forced? Were they invited? Was their own decision? Nobody knows. You can ask them. If you have any question, please contact the corresponding author. They say quite diplomatically that this paper has been withdrawn by its authors. So they intend to revise it in response to the comments received from the research community on their technical approach and their interpretation of their results. So nobody knows who invited these authors to withdraw the paper, to retract the paper. Paper is still there, you can read it, whatever the case. It is now officially retracted. Now, let's try to use our head. Let's try to use logics. So we have a lot of information, interpretation can vary. So let's see if our ability to interpret things, to read things, helps us. Now, let's use some logic. If this uncanny similarity between the spike proteins of HIV and the new coronavirus were true, one may assume that drugs that are effective against HIV would prove useful against the new coronavirus. And this would be particularly true for the HIV protease inhibitors that have been developed for the past 20 years or so, because both the coronavirus and the HIV, they need proteases to be activated. Is this true? It appears to be true, because on the 27th of February in Nature Biotechnology, so highest level of credibility, they published this article where a coronavirus puts a drug repurposing on the fast track. So drug repurposing means drugs that were designed for something, they are repurposed for some other goal. And we see that HIV protease inhibitors are now on clinical trials for coronavirus. So they seem to be effective against the coronavirus, but also other drugs like azacitidine, AZT, the famous, or infamous AZT, that has nothing to do with proteases, that is effective against HIV. It has a number of side effects, but there is no doubt that it's effective against the virus. Now it is on trial against the coronavirus. So apparently what works against HIV with or without side effects may work against the coronavirus as well. These are the clinical trials, official trials, not alternative, no conspiracy theory, official trials, you can check the numbers. So essentially, this uncanny similarity has prompted medical researchers to try HIV drugs against the coronavirus. Now, if the protease that is responsible for the activation of the coronavirus and makes it so infectious is this furin, as it is, these Chinese researchers, those that I have mentioned before, they found potential furin inhibitors, which might be used in the treatment of the new pneumonia due to the coronavirus. Now, again, you can go and download the paper and look for yourself. So I will very rapidly go through this list of a number of things. But please remember that in China, the classification of drugs and supplements is obviously very different than from the US. So something that here in the US is a supplement, over there maybe it is a drug, and the other way around. So they have this table with a number of furin inhibitors from the drug database. You can recognize something like the folic acid, you have heard of that, or the L-arginine or the L-DOPA. Methotrexate is an anti-cancer drug. So a long list of 18 different drugs that may work as furin inhibitors, and as such, they may help counteracting the activation of the coronavirus. You recognize the folinic acid, you recognize the glutathione. Again, glutathione in this table is listed among drugs. Somewhere else is a supplement, but let's not be picky about classification. Now, given the millennia old tradition of Chinese medicine with herbs and botanicals, they also have another table, table three, where they find potential inhibitors of this protease that activates the coronavirus from natural products. Now, I cannot even pronounce all these botanicals. Let me tell you, these are botanicals that you can find in many shops, and you can go for yourself and look at the source from Camellia sinensis to other other herbs that, again, I have difficulty in pronouncing. A long list that goes on, and this table ends with 14 different botanicals that may act as furin inhibitors and as such inhibit the formation of the spike proteins of the coronavirus that in turn are responsible for the high infectious potential of this virus. Now, the drugs and the supplements listed in the previous tables from the Chinese authors are potential furin inhibitors. What does it mean? It means that those drugs and supplements may help preventing the formation of the spikes that the coronavirus and the HIV as well use to attack the human cells. Now, in the following slides, we shall consider other approaches that neutralize the spikes. So in other words, once the spikes have been formed, can we neutralize them so to prevent the attack of the virus onto their targets on the human cells? Can we block somehow those spikes? Can we put like a tip or like a safe on top of those spikes so that they do not bind to their receptors and the viruses are not infectious any longer? As this slide says, now this cartoon is about HIV, but we have seen that the mechanism of action is the same. The tips of the spike proteins, you remember those very colorful arrows, that are the binding sites, might be therefore another potential target for inhibiting the binding of the new coronavirus or the HIV to their targets on cells. Now, I don't know if you remember, but those tips, they show a peculiar concentration of positive electrical charges. And this is what was written by those Indian researchers in the paper that has been withdrawn. So you see the tips that are the same in HIV and the new coronavirus, they have a high concentration or high density of positively charged residues. You may wonder, am I basing all the hypotheses on an article that has been retracted? Not actually. Because a couple of weeks after that article from Cornell University, authors published in another preprint server, this is called Archive, a structural modeling of the new coronavirus. And if you want to lose your eyesight, you can go and look at the sequence of the amino acids, and you will find the exact identical sequence to that. It's around here. You can go and look it exactly identical sequence as that shown by the Indian researchers in their withdrawn paper. So in other words, the sequences are for real, they are there. And there is no doubt that the tips of the spike proteins of the new coronavirus, they have a high density of positively charged residues. Now, if you wish to neutralize something that has a high positive charge, you need something with a high density of negative charges. And fortunately, this is something that happens to be a subject of my research since 1984, when I was studying glycosaminoglycans that are kind of sugars, polysaccharides, that are extremely rich in negative charges, like heparin or chondroitin sulfate. They are the biomolecules with the highest density of negative charges in the world, in the biological world. So this is the chemistry of the chondroitin sulfate, and it is highly negative because of the presence of carboxyl and sulfur groups with sulfur, that are highly negative. So we now have compounds that are highly charged with negative charges that could bind to the tips of the spike proteins of the new coronavirus and HIV as well, and therefore to neutralize those tips to prevent the attack of the virus onto the cells. Again, let's use some logic. If this were true, chondroitin sulfate would be an inhibitor of HIV infectivity. Let's forget about the new coronavirus for a moment because nobody has tried it as yet. But if the coronavirus and the HIV, they have the same tips positively charged on the extremities of their spike proteins, and if all this is true, then chondroitin sulfate that is negatively charged should attack, should bind those tips and prevent the infectivity because, as I said, the HIV has the same positively charged tips on the spike proteins. Now, this happens to be true and to be known since 1998, when it was published. You can retrieve this paper in PubMed, that chondroitin sulfate and carrageenan, so other polysaccharides that are highly negative, are potent inhibitors of HIV. And before this publication, there were two patents filed in 1986 from Japanese pharmaceutical industry, where they propose polysaccharides like chondroitin sulfate for the treatment of diseases plural caused by retroviruses, plural. And this other patent was, the application was filed 1 year later in 1987 by Luitpold Pharma, big pharma from Germany. Again, chondroitin polysulfate for treatment of immunodeficiencies caused by retroviruses. So it is well accepted now for more than 20 years that chondroitin sulfate, because of the negatively charged moieties, the high density of negative charges, can block the infectivity of HIV. Could it block the infectivity of the coronavirus as well? No experimental data as of today, but at least theoretically, it could. And as a matter of fact, it does against other viruses. So it is not specific for HIV, because other viruses as well, they use positively charged molecules on their surface to attack their hosts, whether the hosts are humans or plants. So this paper was published in 2005. Chondroitin sulfate is a potent inhibitor of herpes simplex, or chondroitin sulfate against tobacco mosaic virus. But apparently, this is a universal mechanism. If you have something like chondroitin sulfate that has a high density of negative charges, it can block all those viruses that use tips with positive charges. Or could it work against coronavirus? Again, no experimental data, but theoretically it could. And talking about chondroitin sulfate, we recently described a novel type of chondroitin sulfate that is the product of microbial fermentation. In other words, does not derive from animal sources like shark or bovine cartilage. You can go back to this talk of mine that I gave for the Sophia Health Institute. That was on the 3rd of October 2018, so it was 1.5 year ago, where I describe in detail this new chondroitin sulfate that has the great advantage of being of coming from microbial fermentation and also of having a much higher density of negative charges. This is the original paper published in 2014, where these researchers, they demonstrated that this microbial chondroitin sulfate is three times more efficient than the animal derived, and it reduces the level of pro-inflammatory cytokines in the human plasma. So are you afraid of cytokine storms? This could be good because it has been clinically demonstrated to reduce the plasmatic levels of pro-inflammatory cytokines. And another paper published in April 2019 on the same topic states that the chondroitin sulfate from microbial fermentation, possessing a lower molecular weight than an animal-derived sample, produces a greater chondroitin sulfate concentration for a more prolonged period of time in plasma and, most important, an increase in charge density of endogenous plasma chondroitin sulfate. Then you can ask Dr. Schaffner where you can find this microbial chondroitin sulfate, or you can go back to that talk of mine that I gave in October of 2018. Now, let's leave the chondroitin sulfate for a moment, because in addition to chondroitin sulfate, where else can we find naturally produced molecules with high density of negative charges that can neutralize the tips of the spikes of the viruses? Again, microbial fermentation gives us an answer. As you may know, we have been working on microbial fermentation with a goal of producing immune-stimulating molecules, DPMAF or GCMF, if you prefer, since 2018. This is our first paper published in 2018, where we demonstrate how microbial fermentation leads to the production of GCMF that in turn can rebalance and stimulate the immune system. More recently, I would say just a few weeks ago, we published a paper demonstrating that microbial fermentation leads to molecules that are 100-fold more efficient than purified DBP or GCMAF in attacking NAGLase. Another time we can talk about NAGLase, but you can go to bioarchive and download this paper of ours, where we demonstrate that the product of fermentation is about 100 times more efficient in binding or against human NAGLase than purified BCNF. So now we have, thanks to microbial fermentation, these molecules that are 100 times more efficient than GCMF. And these molecules, they show a peculiar concentration of negatively charged residues in correspondence of the sequences that bind viruses. Stay with me for a few more minutes, and I'm very close to the end. I know this is extremely complicated. Now, let's talk about another virus. But we have seen that many viruses, they use the same mechanism to enter into the human cells. Now, this is the hepatitis B virus. The hepatitis B virus binds to these sequences of its receptor that is called NTCP, stands for sodium taurocholate cotransporting polypeptide. Don't worry. This receptor is very similar to GCMF. And GCMF in this region has a high concentration of negatively charged residues. In other words, it may block the tips of the spike proteins so that they cannot bind to their receptor on human cells. Other options, rapidly. We have been talking about neutralizing the spikes. We have been talking about preventing the formation of the spikes. How about stem cells? You remember I was working on this topic in 2009. Actually, our observations were then published by Nature. NPG stands for Nature Publishing Group. So this is a journal of the Nature Publishing Group. And if you like, I don't know whether this is available online. If it is not, please ask and I will send you a reprint of this paper. So this comes again from the China Archive a few days ago. Clinical remission of a critically ill coronavirus patient treated by human umbilical cord mesenchymal stem cells. So they use stem cells from the umbilical cord and they observe a clinical remission of one patient. You may say, well, one patient, good for him, but is this clinically relevant? And by the way, you know, all this research comes from China, only one patient in China treated by Chinese researchers. So very interesting, but can this stem cell treatment be generalized? Well, let's see. Now, this is another paper. Transplantation of stem cells from the umbilical cord improves the outcome of patients, plural, with the coronavirus pneumonia. long list of authors, and you can recognize many of these authors. They don't have a Chinese name because they come from Paris, France. They come from Tel Aviv, Israel. They come from Fort Worth, Texas. They come from Hong Kong. They come from Russia. They come from Spain. They come from India. They come from United Kingdom. They come from South Korea and even from Palermo, Italy. So this is a multi-center study with researchers coming basically from all over the world reporting the same excellent results treating patients with mesenchymal stem cells. This is the conclusion of this paper. Ultimately, the patients with severe coronavirus pneumonia survived the worst condition and recovery. I realize that their English is as good as mine, but I think it is understandable. Therefore, the fact that transplantation of a mesenchymal stem cells improved the outcome of coronavirus patients may be through regulating inflammatory response and promoting tissue repair and regeneration. So again, we go at the anti-inflammatory responses that we have seen in another paper, in another study, with the chondroitin sulfate. For those of you who are interested in images, you can see the beautiful difference between before and after. So you see that the pneumonia, the lungs are completely cleared after this approach with mesenchymal stem cells. Now, we are at the end. And I think that the word that the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, pronounced in 2002 in a completely different setting are perfectly appropriate. What is the message here? The message is that there are no knowns. There are things that we know that we know. There are things that we now know we don't know, and there are many. There are things that we do not know, we don't know. And also these, I am afraid there are many. So when we do the best we can and we pull all this information together, and we then say, well, that's basically what we see as the situation, that is really only the known unknowns and the known unknowns. So the Secretary of Defense was mocked because, you know, it seems not understandable, but actually that's the reality. There are many things that we know, many things that we don't know, and also many things that we don't know that we don't know. So the conclusion here is that it's an evolving situation. We are learning every day thanks to this new way of communicating a scientific result in real time. We are learning from what they are doing in some laboratory in China, in India, in Italy, in United Kingdom, and of course, United States in real time. And this is a wonderful advantage that maybe will change forever the way science is communicated. I truly hope so. We cannot wait for months for results to be published. We cannot wait any longer. And so what's the message here? The message here is, of course, to always follow the guidelines and refer to competent and highly professional doctors like those that you can find at the Sophia Health Institute. It has been a pleasure, a honor, and a privilege talking with you about all these things today. I stayed within the time limit. I hope that at least something was understandable. If it was not, please go back and replay this talk, or feel free to ask Dr. Schaffner or myself. I thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Marco. That was incredible and is making me think about a lot of different angles for treatment and prevention. And I'm going to have to listen to this one more time. Do you have a few minutes for questions?
Absolutely.
So a lot of gratitude. People are really grateful for your presentation and your time. So let's just go through, and everyone, remember, we're going to send out the recording, so don't worry if you had to hop off or joined us a little late, we will send the full recording. Okay, so lots of questions rolling in. I guess taking a moment about the chondroitin sulfate. So we know people are asking about what products or any microbial fermentative products that have the chondroitin sulfate. So we do have our Sophia Flow Cream that has this in that. Also the Bravo Probiotics. The Immuno, would you consider that a product to have the right chondroitin sulfate as well, Marco?
Yes, the Immuno has the microbial chondroitin sulfate. So it has this high density of negatively charged carbs, and so might be useful. Again, there are no data demonstrating that the chondroitin sulfate works against the coronavirus, but all previous data accumulated in the past 20 years or so against a number of other viruses seem to point into that direction.
Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to see the mechanism of the furan inhibitors. A lot of the herbs that we're recommending and at Sophia are coming up, so andrographis being one of them. We haven't recommended the green tea, but there are some retroviral formulations that we have been working with via BioPure. So BioPure has a product called NV that has mushroom extracts, and it does actually, I believe, have the green tea. I have to check that out. But yeah, that, it's just interesting. I didn't know about that being the mechanism of why they worked. Okay, and so so colostrum or beta-glucan for prevention and treatment, that's a question. Any comments on that?
Well, colostrum in itself is a good stimulant and rebalances the immune system, even better when it is fermented, as in the products of microbial fermentation I've mentioned, because from colostrum you make GCMF, and GCMF, in addition to all the known actions on the immune system, it also has these negatively charged sequences that might be useful in binding viral molecules. So colostrum is good, fermented colostrum is better.
Mm-hmm. Someone's asking, do you have any thoughts about quercetin being a treatment?
No, I don't. I haven't found it in you know, in those lists of potential furin inhibitors, but I assume that not all potential treatments have been studied as of today. Probably, maybe in the future they will. So I know what I found published until today. Maybe in 2 weeks from now, we could have a much longer list of products that could be potential inhibitors, both of furin processing or the spikes or other mechanisms.
Someone's asking about ozone therapy. We use a lot of ozone therapy, and you can get an ozone home generator. We do think that is a tool. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
There is no direct evidence, but again, drawing a comparison with other viruses and other infections, I would say why not? It should be useful.
Mm-hmm. So there's a question around, you know, some of our enzymes or proteolytic enzymes have protease in them. Any clarification around supplemental protease or proteolytic enzymes in this connection with?
We have a lot of proteases in our stomach. Otherwise, we couldn't digest anything. So I wouldn't be worried about this, because here the problem is the proteases. Here the problem is that the virus, the coronavirus in this case, is susceptible to these proteases. It shouldn't be. It has become by mutations, insertions, or whatever. So I don't see any point in inhibiting general proteases. We need proteases for processing of our protein. We need proteases for digestion. So we have to block the mechanism of action of the virus, not the proteases that we need in any case.
Mm-hmm. And then on the list, I don't remember if it said folic acid or folinic acid, and people are
both.
Asking.
Both.
Okay. And then methylated folate is big in our community just because of methylation SNPs that we're supporting people with. Do you have any comments on folic versus folinic versus methylfolate? It seems like they'd all do the job.
Well, they seem all to be good in inhibiting the furin, according at least to those theoretical studies. So if you are good with methylated folic acid, well, you know, the methyl group, they simply increase the potency and the efficacy of the folic acid. So I would say, again, why not? They are not toxic. They have no side effects.
So this question, if HIV protease inhibitor is repurposed for treatment, wouldn't it be the case that it is with HIV that the disease will take hold if the drug is stopped? If not, that would suggest the virus dies after some time if it is not activated, true or not? Any thoughts on that yet?
Absolutely. No idea. Right. I think not even those who are running the clinical trials right now have no idea. I would ask myself another question. And you know, oddly enough, I couldn't find this question anywhere else. But assuming that all this is true, and actually, I didn't. I had no time to insert another slide. I had 76, so more than enough. But just a few minutes ago, I read that there is another research from Chinese researchers again demonstrating this mixture of HIV and the new coronavirus. So it is being confirmed by several angles. So my question is, and I'm not answering, so I'm asking the question, whoever hears or listens to me, please provide an answer. Is there any remote possibility that if you are infected by the new coronavirus and, you know, 80% of patients they recover, so you recover after one, and everything is gone, everything has passed, everything is forgotten, is there any possibility that you become positive to HIV even without having ever met the HIV, simply because you have been infected by a virus that has sequences that are identical to HIV? I don't know. I have this question. Nobody, I don't know if anybody has the answer. If somebody has the answer, please answer this.
Yeah, no, that's a really fascinating question. And then, of course, you know, my brain is also going to how this stimulates our own endogenous retroviral activation and kind of that piece to the puzzle as well. So, so yeah, I think this is a very to be continued conversation. I want to respect Dr. Ruggiero's time. We're getting close to 11 o'clock. And so, again, this replay is going to be sent out. Dr. Klinghardt is also going to do a talk for our community next Tuesday. So he's going to digest more of the information. Again, we're on the front line. We're taking temperatures and dealing with, you know, patients who are coming up with symptoms. And so we are really on the front line of trying to treat people and be as safe as possible. So I think we're going to be learning a lot, but I'm all about education, empowerment. We have so many tools to support people, and Dr. Ruggiero just gave us so many therapeutics and mechanisms to think about to support ourselves and our patients. One thing I just want to share, because you know, it's something that we're using. There's something that we've shared with our community called BrioTech HOCL. It's a hypochlorous solution. They're actually local to Woodinville, and you can take this orally or as a spray or as a disinfectant. And they have even on their website that they've shown that it has effective for the family of coronaviruses. Obviously, this is a novel coronavirus that we're all up against. But Dan from BrioTech, who's the owner, he may be able to talk with us some more. And he's actually going to be talking with Trump and Pence about his findings. So hopefully that will be a solution. So as far as protecting yourself, I've seen some questions about MMS, which is a different type of it's chlorine dioxide, not this hypochlorous solution, but we're spraying our faces at the clinic, our hands. You can nebulize that. So that's something that, you know, we have available, and you can check out their website. And then, of course, that whole suite of products, the Sophia Flow product being one of them, the Bravo suppositories, the yogurt, and then the immuno, if you have access to that. So just stay tuned. We have a lot of tools. I mean, I think in this time, as Marco and I are really, you can get into the fear very quickly. And so I think listening to a lecture like this, even though it stimulates a lot more questions, we have a lot of solutions that we just heard about. So that's what I'm all about. And vitamin C, we're all taking at least 2 grams of vitamin C a day at the office, as well as intravenous vitamin C as well. So again, we have a whole host of toolkit. And Marco, you might laugh at this. I always think that conventional medicine freaks out with viruses because they don't have as many tools. And we just have so many tools. We just need to know when and how to apply them for appropriately. So,
Well, I'm not laughing at this at all. Again, I had no time and I already had too many slides. But if you wish, I can send you another paper comparing Chinese traditional medicine that is highly recommended in China for the treatment of the new coronavirus and Western medicine. So this is a very well done paper by Chinese researchers. So there is nothing to laugh about, because when more than 1 billion people, they trust the traditional and the authorities, Chinese authorities, they trust the traditional medicine. This means that there must be something. So it's not something laughable, not at all.